Blog Talk Radio.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee. Now, that makes no sense because it is absolutely snowing out right now in New York.
What were you even singing?
It's Lee Greenwood. It was proud to be an American. But I was trying to come up with something that had snow in it and just didn't work. The winter wonderland that is New York City this week is here right now outside my apartment. It is snowing like nobody's business. It reminds me of Minnesota weather. And also the fact that, I don't know, my work decided today we should leave early. We have an early dismissal from work. And then we have an announcement that we have a late start tomorrow. It's back to high school for Sean Palmer, considering the fact that yesterday we went to my old stomping ground, called myself and Seth, to the Nassau Veterans Memorial Mausoleum.
You know it's ugly when instead of starting off with, oh, I don't know, the NFC title games, which may not even have been the best sporting event of the weekend, a bunch of other things, we are starting off with an Islanders Flyers hockey game. Welcome to the show, everybody, Seth and Sean. There is ugly.
Don't knock
there
it. Tonight, the Islanders play the Rangers. Don't knock it.
Well, hopefully they're playing outside.
Don't knock the hockey. No, that's next week. But don't knock the hockey.
The hockey was really good. The stadium, and admittedly, I have not been to a hockey game and probably have been to one game at MSG in the last 10 years. And probably one or two games at the PAC out in Newark for the Devils. So we went out yesterday to see the Islander game. I have not seen a stadium like this since about 1982. And I get the feeling that was the last time that this was updated. The scoreboard – I'm sorry, please.
I mean, the second worst – the Nassau Coliseum, let's understand – is host to only one sports team. It is extremely small. So it's kind of like what the Rack is for Rutgers. It's not exactly a nice stadium, but there is not a bad seat in the house. Now, granted, you may not be able to.
That is absolutely not true. You are blocked by batters. You are blocked by the suites. You are blocked by light fixtures. There may not be bad houses, but there's a lot of obstructive.
In every seat, you can see the entire ice.
I would doubt that.
No. You can. I've sat in the worst seats. In every seat, you can see the entire ice. Now, you may not be able to see the scoreboard from every seat, but you can see the ice from every seat. Absolutely. And you're closer at Nassau Coliseum than you are at most, if not all, of every other stadium in the league.
It was an entertaining game also, both because the Islanders came back from 3-1 down to win in a shootout in the third, and we had pretty much the high school fans behind us who were pretty much like being at a college sporting event. Just didn't sit down. I felt like this is probably what being in an EPL game was like. No one sat down. They were chanting the whole time. It was fun. The stadium is hideous. The scoreboard belongs on RBI Baseball from not the one that they're coming out with this year. The one from 1992, or 1988, where Tony Armas was the best hitter for the Red Sox. The scoreboard was laughable. The neon was ridiculous, but it did have. I wouldn't say it had a charm, but I can understand if you're from there what the nostalgic feel for is about.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's where I grew. It's basically the stadium that I grew up in, so I really can't say much bad about it except it just hasn't been renovated in a while. And in 2 years, the Islanders moved to Brooklyn, which will be a welcome change for those that are looking for new stuff in the stadium. But the fan base is certainly going to change. Now, Seth, have you been to many a pro sporting event?
Yes.
The parking lot was something that you generally don't see. Like the way that
it was.
I mean, the fandom that the Islanders have, the pride that the Islanders fan has in pro sporting events is not usually seen at all. I mean, if I have to take something of pride from going to a game yesterday, it was that our fans are one of the best fan bases in the country.
Yeah, I was impressed. I really was. I wouldn't put it up per se against college teams, but against pro teams, and maybe also because the stadium is so small that the sound really amplifies. But considering the size of the arena, considering that it was Nickelodeon Day, so we saw a lot of SpongeBob SquarePants dolls, it was really loud and quite raucous. It was a good time. The parking was made – the parking was ridiculous. It was literally one way in, one way out. It's in the middle of nowhere. And I apologize to all the Hofstra alum who are listening, which is probably Marquise Colston and Wayne Corbett. But, it's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And usually it's hard to say that about Long Island. This was the middle of nowhere.
No, there's absolutely no mass transit to the place, which is one of its downfalls. And that's why when they moved to Brooklyn, I mean, I was talking with my older brother last night, and there is no more ardent a Islander fan than my older brother, Mitch. And we were talking about it, and the fan base has to change because you're going to see a lot of people that are just not going to make that trip into Brooklyn. So the question is, who's going to take the place of those fans? What the Islanders are hoping for is that it's going to be the businessmen on the way home, because it's right at the crux of Atlantic Yards is where the Barclays Center is. And it is a major hub for mass transit. Both the LIRR and the subway both have a stop right there. So it will change the fan base a little bit, in my opinion. And I'm not sure you'll be able to get 14,000, 15,000 like you did yesterday on a Monday afternoon, because I don't think it's going to be the family affair that we had yesterday. Yesterday, there were more kids there than I think there were adults, which is great for hockey. But at the same time, once you get to the point of moving to Brooklyn where there's not as much parking, well, if any parking, what do you do then?
It will be an interesting situation. Obviously, the demographic of your team changes when you move from East Jibib to pretty much the newest and biggest thing in New York City, the Barclays Center in downtown Brooklyn. But that's 8 minutes about hockey, and I think that's all we really need to talk about, isn't it, until we get to the Olympics?
Womp, womp.
There you go. That was pretty good, considering we are not in the same room. Seth and Sean, if anyone wants to call in today, it's kind of a lax show, 760-283-0846. We probably should talk a little bit of football. There were a couple games, one which was worth watching, one not particularly. The Denver
No. They were both worth watching for different reasons.
Well, they were worth watching for – the New England game was worth watching for you because you got to watch your most hated rival suffer and suffer badly. New England outplayed dramatically by Denver. Peyton Manning, the first player ever to have 400 yards passing against a Belichick offense, Belichick defense. Tom Brady did not look sharp. Garrett Blount could not run the ball. Denver, I would say, for all intents and purposes, cruised to a 26-16 victory in a game that never really felt like it was in doubt, despite the concerns of my partner in crime, who was cursing up a storm with about 5 minutes to go when New England had a chance to cut the lead to one possession.
Yeah, well, let's also give credit to the entirety of the Denver offense in the fact that not only was it the first time that there's been 400 yards passing against Belichick, but it's the first time there's been 500 yards of total offense against Belichick. So it wasn't just, the Rangers just scored, 1-0 Rangers over the Islanders. So that's like 8 minutes and 30 seconds worth of hockey. Anyway, so to the entirety of the Denver offense, well done. But let me ask you this, and I know you picked up on this when I was saying I wanted I want Peyton Manning to win a Super Bowl because I want the comparison between Brady and Manning to continue and to be a little closer. But is there a question? Now, I know that New England went, 13-3, 12-4. I know Brady had a good year. But Brady is not the quarterback, in my mind anymore, that takes over games. I think he's taken that step down. I think he needs a lot more help than he ever has before. And he's not going to I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'd be surprised if he threw for more than 300 yards half the games this year.
Well, I don't know if that's a fair thing to say. And simply because they have no weapons. None. Except for Julian Edelman, who would be a slot receiver anyplace else. They have no, I have been extraordinarily impressed with this New England team because I don't think they have very much talent.
But you've never thought that they had talent. So
no,
why
I don't.
Is this
no, but they have even. But they've had even. Who's the second receiver on New England?
Who's been the second receiver ever on New England?
They have had serviceable players. Wes Walker was a second one for a while. Obviously, a very good player. They had Troy Brown, Deion Branch. These are serviceable players. Danny Amendola was hurt for a good portion of the year. Who is your number two receiver? Kendall Tompkins? Excuse me. I mean, these are not guys that, forgetting that fantasy, that, you know, the casual fan hasn't heard of, these are people that a lot of people haven't heard of. You know, Aaron Dobson. You know, I mean, there is very little talent there right now. Gronkowski played, four games? Three games? You know, it's one thing losing, you know, yes, and this is an argument that I have made with Sean before, the reason I have such a high respect, probably even for Brady than probably most people do, is because as great as Peyton Manning has been, he has always been surrounded by phenomenal offensive talent, Edgar and James, Marvin Harrison, Dallas Clark, Reggie Wayne. New England hasn't. They've had nice players, and except for Randy Moss, who obviously was a superstar. But look at the stats. He had the one year that Randy Moss was happy in New England. He broke the touchdown record. They were within a Hail Mary pass of going being the first undefeated team since the 73 Dolphins. So I find it difficult to know because there really is no talent around him, even less than even less than back in the day, 4 or 5 years ago. I don't see it.
Okay, I mean, I cannot disagree with that. In fact, I agree that he has had less talent this year than any other year. That's true. But don't tell me last year he didn't have talent when he had Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. There was talent.
Well, Gronkowski was, there was certainly more talent. Yeah, Gronkowski. Gronkowski, Welker, and Hernandez. And what were his stats? He was due for, 4,500 yards? The team went 12-4, they lost to the Ravens, who won the Super Bowl in the AFC title game.
What I'm saying is so I understand your point that there's less talent, yada, yada, yada. Fine. My point is that Peyton Manning, granted, he has many more targets. No question about it. I think at this point in their careers, Peyton Manning is a better quarterback than Tom Brady.
I think that's a perfectly legitimate argument, considering Manning is going to pretty much unanimously win the MVP this year.
Right. Well, I think
I'm sorry.
Look, they're both 35, 38 years old. I mean, they're both in their mid to late 30s, and this is probably the beginning of the end of an era. I won't say it's the end of it, but it's the beginning of the end, because when you get to 35, 38 years old, you're supposedly on your downslope of your career. But Peyton's actually been better this year than he has in, the last 10. While Brady has had his worst year, I believe, ever. So the question is, can Brady take over a game at this juncture? I don't know. He certainly had the last three games that I've seen Tom Brady play have been very poor.
I agree. He was not great at the end of the season. He was mediocre in a game he had to be great in this week. You know, it's very rare. I mean, think about it like this. Denver, it struck me that Denver really tried to stop the run. And while Denver, I mean, New England, because New England ran all over Indianapolis a month last week. And you look at it, and you're getting ready to try and stop LeGarrette Blount. Now, LeGarrette Blount is a pretty good running back, but this is a guy who is cut by the Buccaneers this year. The Buccaneers are not exactly a running back juggernaut, especially considering what happened with Doug Martin. You know, they were cut by a 5-11 team, a team that fired their coach. So this is, you know, that they piled up to stop him and not to stop Brady, really, in my mind, justifies your argument. I mean, right now, yeah, Peyton Manning is the best quarterback in the NFL this year. I don't think you're going to question that.
We also said numerous times during the game, wide open receivers, that the passes just weren't there.
Yes. The incompletion to Adelman, which could have been a touchdown early, which could have really transitioned the momentum of the game.
Yeah. So, I mean,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the only thing that, wow, we're off our game right now. You, please.
I think Denver definitely deserved to win. They played better. Look, everybody that listens to the show knows my feelings on the Patriots. I absolutely despise them. As a Jets fan, that's my right. But at the same time, you give them credit for what they did this year, but they have a lot of decisions to make next year going in. One of them is that Julian Edelman, which I didn't even realize, played for the veterans minimum this year.
Yep.
The minimum, and had over 100 catches. So, I mean, Talib, who escaped a big injury, even though it was a pick play that New England uses 80 times a game, is a free agent and is going to want big money. So the question is, where do they go from here? I think they have to sign Edelman, because if they don't, they lose Edelman and Welker in back-to-back years, and I don't think that Brady will be too happy with that. And Brady took less money in order for them to re-sign some of these guys. So I think they need Gronk healthy. Obviously, they need Gronk healthy. They need a healthy Edelman. And they really, really need to redo their wide receivers and their secondary. Their secondary is just horrendous. It's porous. It's always been. Belichick has done a horrible job of drafting secondary.
Yeah, there's no real argument. You know, Belichick's comments, if those of you who saw his press conference, that, you know, the play by Welker against Aki Talib was one of the most blatantly disgusting plays he's ever seen, is blatantly ridiculous. It was a pick play. We know it was a pick play. He knows it was a pick play. He didn't go high to the head. He didn't go low to the knees. It was what it was. You know, this is a play we see in every game, run very often, by New England. And for him to make those comments, and it was surprising because it was a press conference where he was very vocal, like very open, which is unlike Belichick. But there is no, you know, there's a bit of bad blood with them anyway between Welker and Belichick coming back to his last year in New England. And, you know, while I certainly don't think that there was any intent for injury, I think it's ridiculous if anyone thinks to the contrary, I'm sure there was an additional satisfaction for Welker making the Super Bowl, going against his old rivals, against his old team. Excuse me.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And yeah, and no argument. Yeah, the drafting the last 5 years by New England has not been great, and they're a team that you feel should be on the decline and should have been on the decline the last couple of years, and they just haven't. And there hasn't been a team to beat them out, whether it was Miami in the East, or Cincinnati, or Indianapolis in the playoffs. You know, they're still hanging around, and until they don't, it's hard to count them out.
Well, a lot of them hanging around comes from the fact that they play in the AFC East. I mean, granted, my beloved Jets play there as well, but they have been, over the last 3 or 4 years, one of the worst divisions in football. So when you play six games against one of the worst divisions in football, you're probably going to go 4-2 or 5-1 when you're that best team. And that's what New England has done. They feasted on the best teams in football, the worst teams in football. It's not to say they haven't beaten the best. You beat Denver in the regular season. You beat New Orleans in the regular season. But they have not dominated the way that they have in the past. And it's not luck. They've won, and a win is a win. But these games are a lot closer. So maybe if Miami or Buffalo or even the Jets become better teams, you'll see somebody taking that AFC East title. And with that title generally comes a first-round bye. So moving on to the second game, probably the better of the two games. Well, probably being an understatement. We'll call it the Richard Sherman game.
Well, that's how it's going to be remembered, not for the horrendous reffing, which almost cost San Francisco the game, not for the great, one of the better touchdown passes you'll ever see from Kaepernick the 30-yard almost jump pass from Kaepernick, not the Hall of Fame performance by Doug Baldwin, but it will be known as the Richard Sherman game. And what's the and now the shame of it almost is that you get the feeling that, number one, Sherman is going to be the main character going into the Super Bowl, which considering you have a Peyton, which is pretty amazing considering you have Peyton Manning coming off of, you know, potentially career-ending surgery to having one of the greatest years ever by a quarterback. And you're pretty much commenting on Sherman not because he's the best corner in the league, not because he's a guy who came out of Compton, graduated from Stanford, and has become the leader of the best secondary in the league. Or not even that you have the number one offense versus the number one defense. It's all about, you know, Sherman and his mouth, which is a shame because he's a hell of a player. Now, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question he's a hell of a player, and this is just the way he plays, and that's okay. And I've said this before, what Richard Sherman said, that's fine. I have no problem with anything he said. I really don't. I have a problem with where he said it. I have a problem with when he said it. But what he said, there's no problem there.
No.
And for Erin Andrews to put a mic in front of Richard Sherman at that point, not to say she was wrong, she wasn't. But what do you really expect him to say at that point? He was talking trash on the field with Michael Crabtree 30 seconds before that happens. People don't just turn on and off emotions like that. Myself and Seth were listening to Mike Rubica yesterday, who said, "I'm shocked this doesn't happen more often." And I looked at Seth and go, completely agree.
Yeah.
If Deion Sanders was in today's NFL, you'd be hearing a lot worse than what you heard out of Richard Sherman.
I mean, the issue, we had an interesting, we were at a bar watching the game, and we couldn't hear actually what he said. All we saw was the visual. And the visual looked ridiculous. And so we really didn't know what he had said. We didn't know if he had cursed. We didn't know if there was racial overtones. We didn't know anything. All we know is we said, man, he looks stupid doing this. And then, you know, I got home and I watched the replay, and I was, to be honest, I started kind of laughing. I was like, this was kind of a useless 30 seconds of BS. I don't care he says that. He should, you know, he's already stated he thought he's the best. You know, this is what he talked. This is what he does. You know, watch his interview with Skip Bayless. I mean, anyone who tells off Skip Bayless is okay in my book. But, I mean, you know, watch what he says about, you know, anything. This is his personality. And it's a shame how bad it made him look. But the actual words that he said, I thought it was stupid. I thought it was the wrong place to say it, but I didn't care that he said it. I mean, yeah, Lubega is right. To me, sideline reporters are kind of a waste anyway. I don't expect very much, and that's usually what I get. And it's not a reflection on Erin Andrews or Susie Colber or Tom Verducci, who does some of it, like, or any of these guys, or Craig Sager. In any sport, to me, you know, we're never going to get it. You know, people want honesty, and then when they get it, they don't like it. And
yeah,
you can't have it both ways.
That's exactly correct. I mean, that is spot on correct. And for any person, and I say this because I've looked on Twitter all day, yesterday, Twitter and Facebook alike, and for anybody to think this has anything to do with race or anything along those lines, those are the ignorant people.
Wait, you don't think this has anything to do with race?
No, I think that the fact that he did that, the fact of what he said, I have a problem with people taking umbrage with what he did because of his race. Where they're saying, because he's African-American, he did this. No, no. Look, he was stupid. By the way, the Rangers up 2-0. He was stupid. What he said was stupid. It was in the wrong time, wrong place, wrong manner, but it was emotional. And he said what he felt, and I'm okay with that. Look, we live in a society where you want the, as Seth just said, you want the truth. Well, as Jack Nicholson said, perhaps you can't handle the truth. In this case, the world can't handle the truth. This is Richard Sherman. I'm okay with whatever he is. That's all right. He didn't degrade anybody. He said, I'm the best. That's it. And I know Seth and I have had this conversation in relation to Muhammad Ali and how this is not the same as Muhammad Ali. But the more and more I thought about it, Seth, the more and more I thought, why isn't it the same? All he said was, I'm the best. I'm the greatest. We think of Muhammad Ali with such reverence when he is a cocky person that said, I'm the greatest. All Richard Sherman did was say, I'm the greatest, and he looked at Michael Crabtree as Muhammad Ali looked at Joe Frazier, and said, you can't touch me. I see direct parallels in that.
Oh.
You might disagree, but I see direct parallels in what happened.
I've heard people discussing this. To me, it's a little bit hard to take the guy who was later considered one of the three greatest athletes of the 20th century and then compare it to a 24-year-old cornerback.
Wait, but you didn't know that when he said it.
Yeah, I understand that. No, I understand that. But again, I'm looking at it in retrospect. I'm not looking at it when it happened. I wasn't around in 1963 when he beat Sonny Liston for the title. I wasn't around in 75 for the thrill in Manila or 74 for the fight with the first fight with Foreman and the third fight with Frazier. I wasn't around for these things. So, you know, I see this all in retrospect and hold Ali in great reverence. But remember, he was hated for many years by my assumption would be the consensus of the white populace. And
you don't think Richard Sherman's going to be – look, you know how many Denver fans Richard Sherman made on Sunday night?
Oh, yeah. But I think it's a shorter – I think it's on a less significant scale. I think Sherman's words relevant, obviously, because we're going into the Super Bowl. But I think a month from now, they won't particularly resonate.
Well, you're right, because Richard's a cornerback on a football team, and Muhammad Ali was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Exactly. And that's part of why I find it a little bit more difficult to relate the two. You know, look, I'm not taking anything away from Richard Sherman. He's the best cornerback, and he's right. He's probably the best cornerback in the NFL. But he is not considered the best athlete in the world. He's not considered a leader in any major capacity other than for his team. And that's not a negative towards him or a knock towards him. But when you're comparing him to someone considered the most influential athlete potentially of all time, it just doesn't flow the same way to me.
No, I can appreciate that. I mean, I think what I'm saying is if you think of the word, and you're agreeing with me, so it's all about the words that you said.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali said, I'm the greatest.
He didn't say, I'm the greatest boxer. He said, I'm the greatest. Richard Sherman actually quantified that. He said, I'm the greatest corner. And to me, spot on. Said what he is. I have no problem with a little bit of cockiness. And you're right. Ali was hated for that cockiness, amongst other things. There's a lot more to Ali's story, as we both know. But, I have no problem with Sherman saying it. I have no problem with what he did at all. I have a problem with the reaction that people are having to it more than anything else. So now we have 2 weeks to hear about Richard Sherman and Peyton Manning. And I'm not sure which one you're going to hear more about. And we'll talk more about our Super Bowl picks next week. But there are some keys to this game, one of which to me is going to be Percy Harvin and whether he plays or not.
Yeah, well, Denver's defense, I mean, is not, to be perfectly honest, although they played pretty well last week. They're not a great defense by any stretch, especially with Von Miller out with a torn ACL. But Seattle, and, you know, we were laughing listening to Mr. Baldwin talk about, I guess, how he would have a Seattle receiving crew was diffed by Chris Carter and Keyshawn Johnson. And you know, the reality is nobody considers Golden Tate or Doug Baldwin a number one receiver on a Super Bowl-caliber team. Now, maybe it's because they're a predominantly running and defense kind of circa 1980s-style team. But nobody, you know, I mean, Baldwin had a great game. Tate had a couple of big plays, if I remember correctly. Kearse had that awesome catch in the end zone. But, you know, there is not a definitive number one. With Champ Bailey, you know, on his last legs, there certainly is no shutdown corner in Denver at this point. And Percy Harvin is the guy with the speed and the, whatever you want to call it, the it factor to really have a huge impact in 2 weeks.
Yeah, he provides that. You're absolutely right, that it factor. I think he totally changes the complexion of that offense. And if he is healthy, and he hasn't been healthy the whole year, so that's a major if, that changes the dynamic, and that gives the Denver defense one more thing to worry about, especially since without Von Miller, they really don't have the pass rush. They have Sean Phillips and Robert Ayers, but other than that, they really don't have a pass rush, and I think they're going to be trying to stop more so Marshawn Lynch than looking to the receivers. Now, this is just a shout-out to my buddy Nabata Isles. I do believe Hall of Famer Doug Baldwin will have a good game in the Super Bowl. But
oh, Mr. Isles. You guys put 7 hours together and you didn't kill each other. I couldn't have been prouder. But it was interesting. Yeah, well done. Well done by both of you. Going on, we're still a team without a coach in Cleveland. It looks like Adam Gase is going to turn down even interviewing for the job. Really, firing a coach after a year does not exactly offer a great – you're not going to have a great deal of enthusiasm for this job. And I don't actually think it's a bad job. You have a good defense, a good young defense, a stud wideout, two first-round picks, which you know you're going to go at a minimum quarterback something. It may be quarterback. You know, they're going to go quarterback running back in the first round or in the second round. They're in a division where Cincy is the favorite, but certainly not overwhelming. Pittsburgh is old. Baltimore is old. It's a division that could be up for grabs over the next couple of years. But it says something after firing a guy after 1 year in which you lost two quarterbacks. No one really trusts Joe Banner or Jim Haslam off the shores of Lake Erie.
Well, I think that's part of it. Another part is the team consistently in the last, I think it was 10 years, has had six head coaches. So it's not necessarily just Chudzinski, it's going backwards.
it's the fact that they're going to have to develop their first their own quarterback again. So if you're developing a quarterback, will the team have patience for you to develop with that quarterback? And if they don't, then you're going to be out of a job too. So do you want to make this in the terms of Adam Gase, or some young hot stud coordinator, especially a Josh, I'll even go Josh McDaniel, who's from Ohio, do you want to take this step knowing that if you're fired, it's going to take you some time to get back on that rung? I mean, look at McDaniel. McDaniel has been out of the head coaching job for, what, 4 years now? Three, 4 years? And he didn't have any interviews last year for this type of a job. It took him 3 years to get back into it. And here he is. Do you take that leap knowing that in 2 years you may be back? And once fired, coaches generally get a second shot. I don't know many twice-fired coaches that actually come back. I know you got Marty Schottenheimer.
North Turner. I think had three coaching jobs.
Wade Phillips.
There are a few.
Yeah, but there are a few, but they're not young.
No.
Like, it's taken them time to get to those three. They're not fired 2 years later, fired 2 years later, fired 2 years later. Like,
they've also, all three of them that we've mentioned, have had some success.
Right.
I mean, Marty Schottenheimer, went to three AFC title games with the Browns. He went 14-2 with the Chargers. Wade Phillips was a consistent, not a great coach, but 8-8, 9-7, was kind of always in that realm. McDaniels had a pretty bad experience, to be honest, in Denver. And the reality is, if he doesn't succeed in Cleveland, I think it would be very difficult for him to get a head coaching job anytime in the near future, which is why I can understand him being a bit hesitant to take this one.
Right, and I think that's the point, is that if you're going to take that leap, is this the job you take that leap for? And in most cases, it's not, which is why you hear now the guys like Dirk Cotter, who is the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, who used to be the who got fired as offensive coordinator of the Jaguars. And you're like, really? These are the guys they're interviewing? Mike Pennine, who was the defensive coordinator for the Jets, who moved on to be defensive coordinator of the Bills under Doug Marrone. These are the guys? You can't imagine that these are in the top five choices that the Browns had when they thought that they were going to fire Jadinski. I'm amazed that this job has stayed open so long, but more to the point, I'm amazed that these are the guys that they're looking at. I think that you might look at now will be Greg Roman and Vic Fangio, who are the coordinators for the 49ers.
Right, and the one thing that Cleveland may be doing, if this is their thought process, and I kind of give them credit for it. Remember, you can't interview players, coaches, really during when their teams are in play, or it's very difficult to. So the name that that keeps coming up is Dan Quinn, who is the defensive coordinator for Seattle, and he's been the coordinator for 1 year. Gus Bradley was a coordinator before, who has moved on to be the head coach of the Jags. And the way people are saying is that Quinn was actually the guy who should have gotten more of the credit last year, not Bradley. And if that's the guy they want, it's the only time he's available. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Roman's been around a really long time, and this really seems like his best shot at a head coaching position. So we'll see what happens. We're going to see what happens.
Definitely don't hear anything about anymore, which I'm surprised, is you don't hear the name Mike Singletary in any of this. And I'm surprised.
I'm not. He didn't leave under the best of terms in San Francisco. And, the story coming out was, while a great motivator, was not enough of a play-to-play guy to really be a head coach.
Well, remember he went back into Minnesota and has been assistant for Leslie Frazier for the last 3 years. So before he hadn't put his dues in probably in San Francisco after he was the linebacker coach in Baltimore and got hired by San Francisco. But now he's put in some dues as the assistant coach in Minnesota. So he's one of those guys I'm just surprised you just don't hear more about. I don't know.
That does make sense. However, Minnesota, not exactly a real stomping grounds for success over the last few years. So I'm not, you know, it's not exactly like,
I agree.
I mean, the Vikings have been mediocre best the last 3 years on both sides of the ball. So it's not a shock that Singletary hasn't gotten interviews based upon that. Although I think what would have been curious is if Art Briles did go to the Redskins or to Texas, if Singletary, a Baylor alum, would have wanted that job.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Well, so two things. First of all, number one, the Islanders are now down 2-1 versus the Rangers with 2 minutes left in the first period. We'll continue to give you updates here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. And second thing is, so the Tanaka situation, we're switching sports a little bit. Well, not a little bit, completely. The Tanaka situation will resolve itself in Major League Baseball by Friday. It has to. Also, he's going back to Japan. And we all know he's not going back to Japan. So the question is, Mr. Kamens, where does Mr. Tanaka wind up?
I think there's only two real teams out there. I think it's the Yankees or the Dodgers. I find myself a little shocked to say that the Dodgers, who just spent $215 million on Clayton Kershaw and have a ridiculously solid pitching staff with Zach Greinke and Ryu. I forget the first name, and you know the pitchers better than I do. I'm missing another big one.
His name, buddy. His first name
What'd
is Ryu. His first
okay.
name is Ryu.
That's why you're the baseball expert, not myself. But I find, you know, the amount of money that they're spending is making the Yankees look like the devil rays at this point. I think it's going to – at the end of the day, I think Tanaka is going to go wherever he wants to play. If he wants to be in New York, he's going to come to New York. If he wants to be in L.A., he'll go to L.A. I'm sure there are one or two other teams out there that would make sense. I know Seattle would love him, but considering how much success they had with Ichiro for many years with a Japanese superstar, I'm sure the Rangers would love him. But my guess is it's one of those two teams. I think the Yankees are going to end up with him. I just think they're more desperate for it, which means they're going to overpay the living heck out of it. But I would rather them overpay for a 25-year-old than for a 35-year-old, which they tend to do. So we'll see what happens.
Certainly true. I honestly don't think either one of those teams is going to wind up with them. I think
really?
The team that winds up with them is the Chicago Cubs, who have more money than anybody in the world with Tom Ricketts. And, well, anybody outside of L.A., let's put it that way. But I think that they overbid for him. I think they see, as you said, a 25-year-old. Now, let's remember, there has never, ever, did a 25-year-old free agent, all-star free agent, ever in the history of the Major League Baseball. So if Tanaka is as good as he claimed, as good as everybody says he is, he will be a free agent at 25 years old, or he is a free agent at 25 years old. The biggest free agents in Major League Baseball history, well, the first big free agent was Jim Hunter, Catfish Hunter. Hunter was 28. If Kershaw got to be a free agent, he would have been 28. David Price next year will be 28. So you're paying for the years of, for those guys, 28 through, let's say he gets a 7-year contract, 28 through 35. The last two or three years of pitchers at 32 to 35, you're kind of, you assume, unless your name is Nolan Ryan, you're on the down slope of your career.
Tanaka's going to get a contract, if it's a 7-year contract, which it probably will be, 6 or 7 years, from age 25 to 31 or 32. That's the prime. You got the kid in the prime of his career. And I just don't see how, first of all, I can't see how any team doesn't put up that $20 million to bid, because to me it's a no-brainer. What if he actually wants to play with the Cleveland Indians? I'm not saying he will, but what if he saw Major League when he was 5 and liked the movie so much he wants to play with them? The fact of the matter is, I think he goes to the Cubs. I think the Yankees outbid everybody, but only for the second time in history, the first one being Greg Maddux. The Yankees outbid everybody and still lose. And I'll just keep laughing because I think it'll be funny.
It may very well be. Going on to baseball a little bit as well, the AP story that just came out, the major leaguers wanted A-Rod kicked out of the union. But unfortunately, the lawyers told them that apparently you cannot expel a player
There are two things that there are two things about that, and the reason why they wanted to kick him out of the union was that A-Rod sued the union when the arbitrator came down with the suspension. I don't think we've talked since he did come down with the suspension of a full season. A-Rod obviously didn't like the result and wanted to sue in federal court. In order to sue in federal court, you needed to sue both Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. He needed to do that for jurisprudence reasons. So the players, who were misinformed, thought that he just sued the Players Association because out of spite. Unfortunately, he couldn't just sue Major League Baseball, so they tried to get him out of the union, and he can't do that. That's against labor policy. So it's a little funny. I could see why they might want to do it. But for anybody that thinks that A-Rod was suing the union out of spite, incorrect, absolutely incorrect. In order to overturn an arbitrator's ruling, he needed to sue the union as well.
There you go. Well done, sir. It's like you spent your working hours reading this stuff.
I was about to say, every once in a while, that legal background that I spent 3 years on comes in handy.
Now, can you, as a brilliant legal mind, what would you say about Florida State recruit Simeon Bowers, who apparently will be kicked out of Florida State for allegedly eating marijuana to conceal it from the police?
It's not the first time I've heard of the eating marijuana excuse or a way to get out of a ticket or a citation. And from the guy that has never smoked marijuana, I have no idea what it might taste like. But I can only imagine it would taste somewhat like grass. So the fact of the matter is, it
tastes worse than grass. Is
this personal experience? Are you implicating yourself right here?
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully my boss will not be drug testing me anytime in the near future. I have smoked pot before, and I'm quite okay with it.
Bathroom, ladies and gentlemen, there's a cup waiting in Seth's bathroom. We're going to take it to the lab, and we'll have those results next week.
Yeah, but even if they are found positive, I am going to contest it based upon the fact that it was not directly sent to the lab. It went through a FedEx, and somehow it was mistaken. I'm going to use the Ryan Braun defense.
And if it tests positive, your boss is going to give you a raise.
Damn straight. My boss is awesome, if you're listening out there, whoever my boss would be. So about 10 minutes to go.
Let's switch gears. We got 10 more minutes, but I'd like to talk about something I saw on Saturday, which we talk all the time about teams in sports that throughout the season become better and better and better and on their rise to perhaps national championship aspirations. in all sports. But one team that I saw on Saturday, being the Kansas Jayhawks, they look like they're clicking, dude. They look like they got it on all cylinders. And I was talking to a couple of KU alums today at work. If they continue down this path, there is no team in the NCAA tournament that can beat them. None. And I know you're the basketball guy, so I'm asking you, do you see any team, assuming that KU clicks, is there any team in the NCAA that can beat this team?
I don't know if I'm quite the basketball guy anymore, but they are a team. They are probably the team with the most talent in the NCAA. But we've seen that just because they've had that, and we've seen that many times before, especially at Kansas, where the team gets – where they play against a team the wrong time, you know, in Northern Iowa, a University of Virginia back in 97, I want to say, 98, University of Arizona when they won the title in 99. You know, they lost Arizona, I think, in double overtime. They were still clicking. They're very good. They're very talented. But for as talented as they were, Oklahoma State had a chance to win the game on the last possession. And both of us have Oklahoma State in our Final Four, even though Marcus Smart has not been as good, has not made the improvements that we expected. They're very talented. They possibly have the number one and number two picks in the draft in Joel Embiid and Andrew Wiggins. But I am not about to concede them anything at this point. You know, there's a team in upstate New York who hasn't lost yet. There are about five really good teams in the Big Ten. There, you know, it's the problem is because of what's happened in college basketball over the years, and I've talked about this ad nauseum. It's too hard for me to make that kind of prediction. But yes, they are extraordinarily talented, and a team that certainly at their peak could win a national title.
Well, after watching that team from upstate New York that hasn't lost yet on Saturday, I predict that they will lose in the next 2 weeks. A week from Saturday, they play Pitt. They play Duke. They play Pitt again in Pittsburgh. Syracuse is a good team. They are. They will be. I picked them in the Final Four. I still think that they will be in the Final Four. But they do have some weaknesses, and right now they just lost one of their big men for the rest of the season, Juwan Coleman. Now, hasn't played a lot, but, and truth be told, when does Jimmy Boeheim ever play more than seven guys anyway during the end of the year? But the fact of the matter is depth is important, and I think that they're going to suffer a little bit. I do see a loss coming in the next 2 weeks, either to Duke or to Pitt. So I think the unbeatens are going to whittle down. But one team that I proclaim will go unbeaten for the rest of the year will be the Wichita State Shockers. I see them going undefeated the entire year. I'll make that claim now.
You did say that yesterday, and they have been sensational. Coming off a phenomenal run last year to the NCAA Final Four, where they knocked off Gonzaga, knocked off Ohio State, and gave Louisville their best game of the tournament before really collapsing in the last minute, led by Ron Early and a couple other guys who came back. I forget the sophomore's name off the top of my head. They've really come up big. And speaking of a mid-major, I guess they're not really a mid-major anymore because they're part of the Big East. Did you see what Creighton did to Villanova last night?
Well, that was going to be in 5 minutes. You just stole it. But, yeah, I did. And – wow.
We have an email in. We're going to handle it next week. From Evan from Buffalo. Is Peyton the greatest NFL quarterback of all time, regardless of the outcome of the Super Bowl? And is this the best QB performance for a season ever? I think with 5 minutes to go, I don't think we have enough time to really hit on it, because I think that's a 15-minute discussion, to be perfectly honest.
Well, between you and me, Seth, that's been like a week-long discussion. So, yeah
we've been hitting it for a while.
You know what, Evan? We're going to hit on that not next week, but the week after. We'll find out how the Super Bowl goes, and we'll have a show based on it. We'll put that as the question of the day based on after the Super Bowl. I think that's the best time to do it. So
to bring back the question of the day?
We'll bring back the question of the day.
Sounds
good. It's a good way to state it. And Evan, you're more than welcome to call in at that time and tell us your views, because we'd certainly like to hear. Okay, 5 minutes to go. Mr. Kamens, please, if you would.
Welcome back, Roger Federer, after a really disappointing 2012, or 2013, excuse me. The questions are, is he done? He put on one of the best performances in recent memory by him 2 nights ago, beating Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who's a guy who's beaten him at the French, beaten him at Wimbledon, and dominated him in three sets. He's playing Andy Murray tonight, of course, at 4 o'clock in the morning, which, as many of you know, I will be awake for, unfortunately. But I will, hopefully I'll be awake in time to see the end of it. Good for him coming back. And, you know, new coach Stefan Edberg, new racket, really changing, transitioning his game a bit for the first time in a long time. And I believe a real threat to win this tournament now that the number one seed, Novak Djokovic, got knocked out in really what was the best sporting event of the weekend, losing to Stan Wawrinka in the Australian Open quarters, 9-7 in the fifth. Wawrinka had lost to Djokovic 12-10 in the Australian semis last year, and this year won 9-7. So we really have it's an open, and with Serena out, it's kind of open on both sides, so it should be an interesting last few days down under.
Ladies and gentlemen, your 2 minutes of tennis, sponsored by the Seth and John Sports Radio Show, of which
actually
Seth
sponsored
will...
by Kamens and it's sponsored by Kamens and Associates, but that's okay.
Kamens and Associates, okay, fair enough. So we got about a month to go, and the lead up is a couple of outside games next week. We went 8.5 minutes on hockey. We're going to keep going a little bit. I am so looking forward to the Olympic Games. Now, granted, I'm going to have to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning every day to watch them if I want to watch them live. And I may take off a couple of days of work. Seth, no jokes as to when I work and how I work. I still work. at least I still go to the office. I may have to take off a couple of days, maybe have a couple of late breakfasts to watch some of these hockey games. But after the John Buchagross article a couple of weeks back, having insight into the selection process with the U.S. Olympic team, going through the Canadian Olympic team, and if you think Kansas basketball is stacked, go look at the Canadian Olympic team. This is a stacked – I mean, they don't even have – John Tavares is one of the top five players in the NHL. He was a candidate for the Hart Trophy last year. He won't even be one of the top four centers on the Canadian Olympic team. They're moving him to wing. That should just tell you as to how deep they are. The top line of Ilya Kovalchuk, Alexander Ovechkin, and Evgeny Malkin for Russia. Unbelievable hockey is ready to go in Sochi in a little bit. So pay attention. The next month, it'll be the only time you'll ever hear anything about figure skating for 4 years. The only time you'll ever hear anything about luge for 4 years. But I'll tell you right now, the Winter Olympics are a lot of fun for those that care, for those that tune in. And these are young athletes that have trained their entire lives for basically one event. So stay tuned, watch that, and we'll definitely talk more about it as it comes closer, which is in now T-minus 3 weeks. So
yeah,
for Seth Kamens,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we'll do a hockey preview with Keegan Reed probably the week before. So anyway, finish up, please.
Yeah, so for Seth Kamens and the aforementioned Keegan Reed, who may come on sooner or later, and for our guest of honor, Evan Lipton, this is Sean Palmer for the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, Blog Talk Radio, and BackSportsPage.com. Tune in next week, and we'll talk a lot about the Super Bowl and Richard Sherman. See ya.
Bye-bye.